This week on RSVNB Update, the Traveling Artisan revitalizes currency events, and we cover costs, player choice, and a big oddments oopsie. Then we sneak a peek at the roadmap going forward in this week's live stream with a renewed focus on quality and delivering monthly updates. This is RSVNB Update, episode 792, recorded Thursday, August 27th, 2020. Quality, quality, quality. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for another episode of RSVNB Update this week. It's just Tannis and myself here, and I realized that after our little talk last week that I should just introduce you right off the bat.
Yeah, man, you know. Well, you can't forget me now because I'm the only one here.
That's right. That's right. That's right. That is right.
You know, Sundance and Butch, you know?
Yeah, I'm not sure who's going to be which. That's one of the few movies that I have actually seen. So, but...
I don't know. I don't feel like you would be Butch, Shane.
No. You're right.
Is there anything Butch about you?
Well, we're going to get underway here. And this week, of course, we're going to be talking about the Traveling Artisan currency event and all of its flaws and its benefits and what it does for the game. But if you're joining us for the first time, I am Shane12088 and he is Tannis79. And you can, of course, find us in-game in our friends chat, Bits Bytes, and the show notes are available at update.rsbnb.com. So the Traveling Artisan. This is a modern take on a currency event. Many people had mixed reactions to it. I personally love it, the way it's iterated on these currency events in the past, just because, you know, it provides more player choice, I find, in terms of the way you're going to progress, and it feels a whole lot less linear than it was beforehand. What's your quick take on it?
You know, with a currency event, I can, like, take them or leave them. And this one, I'm taking for the rewards. I'm not going to lie. It's cool. I mean, I think it's cool because it is a little bit more, I think, choice than previous iterations of this, but yeah, I mean, how can you not want those rewards,
right? Yeah, and you know, that's where there's all this choice that comes in with this, is because normally with the currency events you get a limited run event where you're looking at, you know, maybe getting a few mystery boxes and tokens along the way if you choose to cash out, and some cosmetic items. But this time we got so much more than that. We have the cosmetic items, as we normally do, in the form of tool overrides that will appear when you use these tools. We have the Dwarven Artisan Rod, the Dwarven Artisan Knife, and the Dwarven Artisan Pickaxe and Hammer. We also have the Chickaxe and Banana Knife available to us. Yeah, the Chickaxe from
the
from that little community April Fool's event all that long time ago. We also got a replay from the Master Crafter event back in March before Archaeology came out. You'll be able to get the Master Crafter chest piece, Master Crafter trousers, the full Master Crafter cosmetic set, and earn XP to it in order to pick those up in addition to everything else.
Hmm? I wonder what you'd call a Master Fisherman. What would that be?
Master Angler.
Judges say no.
I know where you're going with the whole baiter thing, but because we do have the hunting title, a very good baiter in game already. Also with this one is a series of new consumable buffs. The fletching size enhancer boosts the amount of items you can make while fletching by 15 for 10 minutes. This item will expire at the end of the event, of course. We also have upgraded ones that I think increase it to 25, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. We also have the fletching resource enhancer that allows you to save resources while fletching. Luminite enhancers you can buy, which triples the effectiveness of your luminite injectors at the Artisan's Workshop. smithing respect enhancer for the respect that you get at the artisan's workshop. All that will be doubled. Woodcutting perk enhancer doubles the activation chance of your perks while woodcutting. Woodcutting item XP enhancer basically increases the amount of item XP you get on your hatchet. Fish flinging enhancer that doubles the amount of tokens and medals you'll receive. The fishing perk enhancer doubles your fishing perks on your tools, the chances of them activating, also the fishing item XP enhancer, and so on and so forth. But here's where it gets really interesting for mining, in my view. The mining geode enhancer increases your chances to obtain geodes by 10% while mining. And each one of these consumables costs a number of materials to make, and we'll go through exactly how that works in just a tiny bit. But there's one that I'm really interested in, and that's the mining critical chance enhancer that increases your chance to critically strike when mining by 10%. I think these enhancers are the perfect way to do this community event. Because, yeah, I mean, if you want, you can go ahead and you can just go make all the cosmetics as you normally do in these events, right? And then if this was a standard event, you just go along the track, go about your skilling, maybe do some crafting for extra points. But then with this one, if you're not even interested in the cosmetics, just get to the level that you want and then build the consumable that you're most interested in. And I mentioned level because you have Doran the Tool Artisan who can level up to level 30, and each level has a certain amount of XP for it, and there's an amount of XP given for each of these that you need to create. So in addition to having choice of what you're making, there's also a progression mechanic in here as well. And then, you know, you can also get mystery boxes, prismatic stars, and of course the dwarven tools that either double your yield from whatever you're gathering or double the XP. And that's the reward side of this event. And I have to say that I am honestly very impressed with this, with the choices that are on offer here.
I'm really intrigued with the enhancers, and I'm trying to figure out how worth it they are. You know what I mean? Like, versus, you know, just getting go ahead and getting the mystery box of the stars and stuff and throwing that into bonus. Then again, like the tools, like, dude, if you put tools with a pair of brawlers with whatever, you know, that skilling outfit to match, and you go out in the wildy with a divine, I don't know, whatever, like a wood cutting tree, like a divine magic or divine you, and you just have people putting those down, dude.
Yep.
It's sick.
Yeah.
It's sick.
Yeah. And you can have your own little double XP weekend with that, too.
Oh, yeah.
and the reason I say that is because these dwarven tools don't work on regular double XP live events.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
true.
Now, we need to talk a bit about the progression here because that has been a question, and this was one that was sent in to us by Mr. Ling, which we're just kind of slipstreaming into the podcast here at the start rather than the question segment. So you get what's called traveling artisan patches, and you get these whenever you're skilling in-game, generally. And, you know, this is your standard mini-game currency event, and that's one way of completing the event. But alongside of it, there's also the option of contributing other items to it. So if we look at, for example, the mining geode enhancer, or sorry, the mining critical enhancer, that's the one I want to look at. If we look at that instead, you can make one of those by, let's see. So if we press, and see, this is the thing. If you press skip all, it will tell you how much you're able to skip the entirety of that task for. So let me just say that for this mining geode enhancer, you need to always give 250 artisan patches, 10 vials, 40 rune ore, and 50 luminite ore. But the vials, rune ore, and luminite ore can each be skipped for a certain number of patches. So you skip the vials for 10, or sorry, 100 artisan patches. You could skip the rune ore for 400 patches, and then you could skip the luminite for another 400. So when you add all that up, that's 900 plus 250. So you're effectively looking at 1150 artisan patches if you just wanted to make this with patches. But you see, it's considerably less expensive if you just do 250 patches and then those other ingredients. And that's something that I really like with this too, is that, you know, it's more than just, you know, going to grind a certain skill mechanic and say, ah, la-di-da-di-da, here we go. We're just going to go on this long grind, get however many thousands of these traveling artisan patches that you need to complete the event and call it done. With this, you need a smaller amount of artisan patches, and you can also contribute your other items that you have in your bank, which is one of my favorite aspects of it. How do you feel about the progression model? Do you think it's too steep?
When it comes to just the patches?
Just the patches.
Yeah, I do think that's a little high, but it does create a dramatic contrast. So you're definitely being funneled to go, you know, the other way, which, you know, it's a great item. Think it's really, those are really cheap items. And I agree with you that could be used in the future. You know, I think they could do similar things in the future, especially with, I mean, ore is, it's low, right? So when you see a glut starting to happen, maybe, you know, maybe pop something like this in, or I don't know. I'm just talking off my head here.
Absolutely.
But, yeah, I mean, I actually think, and if it was lower, I don't know if there would be the same kind of choice. Because basically, what this is, you know, going to come down to, I'm assuming you can get these patches through other means.
Oh, yeah. Any skilling method gives them. Archaeology is good for it.
Right, but are they on Treasure Hunter?
No, I don't think so.
Oh, so it's...
It's 100% in game, unless you want to purchase it with bonds.
I figured there had to be something. Okay.
Yeah.
So yeah,
one bond for 5,000, two bonds for 10,000, three bonds for 20,000.
Oh, this was actually nope. I'll say this is pretty. How can you be so good and so?
Yeah. And, you know, I ran some numbers on this. I ran some numbers on this because that was part of Mr. Ling's question. I just want to, you know, have that out there for full transparency of what we're actually looking at for this. So let's just say, for example, that you wanted to minimize the number of patches that you're going to use. So then you're definitely, with that, going to want to contribute your own ingredients to it. Now, let's say you just want to get to level 30 and unlock all the cosmetics, and you have previously not unlocked the cosmetics from the Master Crafter event, because I've only unlocked two or three of those. So here's the total numbers on what you need to make. For this entire event, you need to unlock all the cosmetics, plus you need to make 7 event mystery boxes, 9 prismatic large stars, 10 big mystery boxes, and that will get you all to level 30. If you do that and you also unlock all the cosmetics. In total, this will need 29,250 patches, assuming you're contributing everything else. And based on my feeling of how this is going, it's probably about 1,000 patches per hour of gameplay. And we know, this event's going to be in place for about 3 weeks.
Okay, 3 weeks.
So you have 3 weeks to get 29,000 patches.
You're going to... Well, but this might be one where you're going to need to pick certain things that you're going for. Because I think 29,000 is too much. It's more than I'm willing to do. So I'm going to have to pick...
You basically have to play for an hour and change a bit each day over the entire 3 weeks. To unlock everything with this event. But there's the caveat that if you don't want any of the cosmetics, and this is where things get really interesting, you can just go to level 5 and, for example, unlock all the various enhancers, like the mining crit enhancer, for example, and just start making them right there. Simple as that. Simple as that. If you want big boxes, that's level 20, so a little bit more. Prismatic large stars are level 15. We also, of course, have the small and medium stars as well, which you can unlock if you want to go that way. So that's where we're at with
that. Really, yeah. This is a really interesting take on the on this kind of an event.
Yeah,
I definitely see you're picking and choosing what you want here.
Yeah, and you know, there's going to be an article going out soon on this on Informer about this various topic, because to me, this combines the best elements of Yak Track and applies them to these currency events that everybody was so fatigued over 3 years ago. Because you remember, these currency events were basically running every month. They were running every month for 2 weeks with 2 weeks off, and people were really tired of them. And every time a currency event came up now, I don't know about you, but whenever I see one of these currency events nowadays, I ignore it unless there's a cosmetic I'm after or it's for one of their charitable events.
And just look and see at my currency pouch the day before it ends and see what I can
put. Yeah.
What did I gather the whole time?
You know? Right. And see, that's another way of looking at it too, is you could just go to the end of the event and then craft it all on the final day and pick that up.
It's nice because I know a lot of my friends, when it comes to these currency events, they take full advantage of them when it comes to the mystery boxes, which they're only trying to get, prismatic stars or whatever out of.
Yeah.
And it's kind of nice that you can progress to a certain level and then put, you know, all your patches straight back into the stars rather than, you know what I mean? Like it's.
Yeah.
That's great for the people that don't want every, you know, that they're only interested in this certain item.
Yeah. Yeah. I also think we need to talk about the elephant in the room of what happened with this week on launch. So there was and you know, we haven't heard exactly what's going to happen about this, but there was basically a convergence happening in this with this event where it awarded oddments.
Convergence. I like that.
Yeah. And it can be boiled down, and it's been patched since then, so I feel comfortable talking about it. What effectively would happen is you'd fill the progress bar on the promotion going on to full. Then you would buy keys from half off in the oddments store, as they did. And then you would use all those keys and then be able to purchase those and convert them into more oddments and effectively rinse and repeat on this. And, you know, I think this is something that we should really talk about in terms of the way that they did this. Because, you know, there's always the question, should there be some kind of penalty for people who engage in this kind of activity? Or is just, you know, this promo overlap on Jagex's end their own fault in terms of this?
Is that rhetorical? Or do you want an answer?
I want an answer.
No. This isn't bug abuse in my opinion. This is no. I don't believe anyone should be in trouble for this. What I think what should happen here is, look, how do you make a piece of content that is so good and leave such a glaring hole in it? Like, this should be a chance for them to learn and try not to do this again. Because I don't know. I know how it come across to some players. Some players, it came across of, oh, you're running all these promotions at the same time, so you're being greedy. You get what you get. That's not my view. I think they just missed it. And
I think the oddments were taken out of this event entirely after that, weren't they?
I think so. Yeah, because they're not. I don't think they're there now.
No.
But yeah, I mean, essentially, you know, this is like doing laps in the Costco picking up the samples. You know, I mean, what am I doing? I ain't doing nothing. Right? You've been here 4 hours. Nah, man, I'm shopping. Hungry. I mean, like, how do you blame the consumer for that?
Yeah, and I mean, there was nothing wrong with the game. It's just the way the promos were structured, and you could, in theory, call that a bug if you wanted to, but because it's not something that was inherently based on code, it was more marketing. The stance that I would take on this is that oddment rerolls is probably the better way to go rather than banning people on this and rerolling treasure hunter items. Because you know that screenshot you posted, someone had, what was it, 21,000 plus protein.
And that was just a drop in the bucket. Yeah.
And you know, it's kind of unfortunate that their first experiment with oddments on this has kind of shifted away and turned into a bad thing on this.
But they messed up. Like, I don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater. I just feel like this was just overlooked. You know, there's no reason to stop experimenting with oddments or to not, you know, keep pursuing the direction that they, you know, they said they want to go. It's just a setback, but it's a setback due to, I mean, someone dropped the ball. At the end of the day, someone dropped the ball.
Yeah,
and I'm sure they have been notified that they dropped the ball.
Oh yeah, and I don't want that to take away from the good aspects of this event, because you know I think the good far outweighs the negative on this.
I mean that, but look, the negative is the big story, right? So that's what, you know, and it's too bad because this actually was a pretty unique. It is a pretty unique currency event. Right, like for all the reasons we described, you know, yeah, it's. I think right now, at best, the best way is to for them to try this exact kind of setup again in the future, because I don't think this will ever get out of that shadow, this particular event. But I would like to see them do all of the same mechanics the same way.
Yeah.
With another one in the future that didn't have that shadow.
Like, I feel that this is the perfect thing to run when Yak Track is not on.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah.
Just because it provides a similar progression mechanism to it as well. And, you know, if you want to go all cosmetics, you're going to have to work hard. But at the same time, being able to pick and choose means you don't necessarily need to work as hard with this one. So there's that.
No, RuneScape is actually finding their own kind of... It's unique to RuneScape, but it's like, you know, between the Yak Track and then events like this, they're really forming their own kind of battle pass situation.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's uniquely kind of RuneScape, which is something I hoped for, and I thought we were done when it came to Yak Track, but now that this has come out, I'm like, well, I guess there was more room to grow. There was more.
I'd love to see a farming one on this.
That'd be cool.
Farming Herblore. That'd be fun. But there was also something else with this update. We got a graphical rework of the artisans, of the dwarf area around where this event is taking place, the Dwarven Mine rework. And you know, this fits in with the art style that we've seen in the game recently with Anachronia and Archaeology. You know, the same kind of textures that are in use, the special focus on atmosphere, I'd say, creating an atmosphere around it with lighting and utilizing things that, you know, you previously wouldn't see. Like, for example, one of the items that you can see, there's like a pulley with a rope on it. That's something you wouldn't have seen before, and it's a unique asset rather than just, you know, a flat little thing hanging down from the sky. We also have, if you go into free camera, there are cots for the dwarves to sleep in, and of course your player can't go in there because, well, dwarves are short, players are not short. So there's cots and chairs and whatnot. So you can really see all around here, and you know, this is the way I think we're going to see graphics reworks done in the future. We're going to see them put in game like this when a piece of content warrants it, where, you know, we're not going to see massive things where, you know, half the world is reworked or something to that effect. I think this is just a standard way to take it, because this, as it is less than one map square. And, you know, it fits. It looks really good. Granted, you know, it doesn't have a custom skybox because it's in the same general Thalador-ish area and has to maintain that aesthetic with it. But overall, I'm quite pleased with this. What do you think of the graphics?
You know, I'll take any excuse for some graphical modernization, right? Like anything will work for me. But I had to ask myself, is there more coming? Is something that was maybe mentioned in the live stream, is that going to have something to do with this area? Because, you know, I don't know.
Oh, the construction stuff.
Unless they've been sitting on this for a while, it's a little unusual.
Yeah. Wow, it just looks amazing. Anyways, let's move on to the patch note. And I say that in all honesty, patch note, singular.
Singular.
Singular patch note this week and one hot fix. For Alchemical Hydrix, the Vine Whip special attack will no longer occur when switching to magic or ranged attack styles. It's still possible to increase the AoE radius when using the appropriate weapon. Of course, the Abyssal Vine Whip is the upgrade to the Abyssal Whip that everybody loves that came out with Slayer way back when. It's just a shame that some of these special attacks on the whips and whatnot aren't that good. Abyssal Vine Whip special attack is the Vine Call. 60% adrenaline strikes the opponent for 200 to 100% damage, so there's going to be more in the damage category that you're going to be interested in, but it also summons a vine that hits the opponent for 10 times with 125% of the user's accuracy and deals 6.5% to 33% ability damage with each hit over time. So that's what that one is talking about. Also, players are no longer able to use an Essence of Finality to cast a channeled weapon special attack and then switch to another Essence of Finality with a different special attack to trigger that on the same global cooldown. So the sense I'm getting from that is if you're channeled, it's supposed to end, and that's what this was fixing.
So, how many weapons do you think we're gonna remember have special attacks that we totally forgot about?
Yeah.
Over the next like 2 or 3 weeks, we're going to see patch notes.
You know what I was actually considering doing after last week's episode and putting everything together? I was actually considering starting to farm the money for an Alchemical Hydrix to get one of these things, because, I mean, I'm just going to be doing Slayer and, you know, maybe at some point Araxor, but probably just Slayer at some point, because, you know, I'm only level 1 of 4 Slayer, so I got to get up there eventually. And I think it'd be really neat to have some of these special attacks.
It does look like fun, man.
Yeah,
I want one. They do look like fun.
Yeah. Just while we're on that topic, I'll also report back that I was in clan chat yesterday and somebody's Brooch of the Gods gave them 4 rumbling components.
Good.
So it can happen.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, yeah, it's on. You're the only one that can use them, but Definitely. Definitely cool.
I'm liking last week's update more and more.
I'm right where I was. I mean, I love this essence of finality, but give me more. Give me more on the brooch. I need more.
All right. Well, speaking of more, we got to exactly see what is on the horizon for RuneScape updates, taking us through the end of the year. We had a general Q&A with mods Warden, Osborne, Huli, and Shogun, with mod JD hosting. And, you know, we learned a lot, and in particular the heading title of this was Orthyn, New Boss, Halloween, Activity Pets, and upcoming content. So they started off by giving a status update on items announced at RuneFest last year. So the City of Sentistan quest, Activity Pets, Elder God Wars Dungeon, Managing Miscellanea rework, Azanandra quest, and so on and so forth. Mod Warden said he, of course, enjoys coming to the table when he has confidence on a release cycle. The Elder God Wars Dungeon won't be this year, but the design and planning is done. A lot of the releases at the tail end of this year will be exploring lore and developing it through skilling. And they're going to have the lore build up to the Elder God Wars Dungeon. And this is what they said about weaving that lore into all the different facets of skilling. Which, you know, I think given the frequency of quests that we got out there, this is so important.
I absolutely, absolutely love this. And it's something that RuneScape can do easier and in a special way that other MMOs can't. Because I feel like in a lot of other MMOs, skilling or crafting, whatever it is, it almost feels like it's tacked on as a, you know, something you kind of got to kind of do.
Yeah.
But that's not how it is in RuneScape. Like, the skilling is this rich thing, and to be able to give, you know, give story through that. Then again, I might just be excited because I found a way to read dialogue boxes now to me. So I'm like, bring on the lore! Yeah! But, no, I think that's great, and it's been missing for a while.
They also recapped the monthly headline releases going forward. They had the Alchemical Hydrix, which was the start of the second half of the year for them. The September release they'll be talking about soon in the next couple of live streams. The Orthyn dig site is what they're calling out of sprint review, which means that they spend, you know, two and a half weeks working on it. And then they look at the progress that they've made, determine where they need to go with it, and carry it forward. And it will be out for an October release, which I think is sooner than we were expecting.
A lot sooner. And it's funny because I was just there over the weekend doing archaeology, because I got to 91, and I was like, oh yeah, I can go finish that focus off. And so I went back up there. I'm like, man, I can't wait till this comes out. And then we get the live stream. I'm like, yeah. All right.
There's going to be a new boss on the scale of Talos, 100% in rage. It'll be a solo duo fight. And they want it to be challenging for the top end. But, you know, based on what David said, I don't think you can get more challenging than Solak. There's also going to be a skilling release around construction. And this is the words he used about this. He said this isn't a rework yet, and they want to discuss more on this skilling construction update in the future.
Yeah. You know, because construction is different. Like, a lot of skills, when we are looking at reworks, you know, mining and smithing is a good example. We're looking for different and better ways of training, and it needs to be realigned. And with construction, we're actually more looking at, like, how you use it rather than just the training of it. And so I think that's cool that we're going to get better, newer training methods. But yeah, we want that full rework, because it's just one of those that, like, it's not just the training methods. Like, we actually really want to be able to construct again our houses.
And they said it'll be spanned throughout the world. It'll be kind of in the same vein as safe cracking.
I'm really interested to see how this how all of these things are going to balance out.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I really hope we don't get another slot machine for the PPM guys again. But we'll see. Because the thing, like, you got to make it good enough to people want to do it, but if it's that good, then it's other problems, you know?
Then you wind up in a situation where Shane's asking Mod Osborne to nerf the safes.
That could happen, too. Yeah.
They'll also be debuting another quest before the end of the year. Won't be as big as Desperate Measures.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking about with the dwarf stuff. I was like, I wonder if this.
Are you thinking it could be a construction related quest?
I was thinking it would be a dwarven related quest, like hints. Reworking that entrance.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense. Because, I mean, before we went to archaeology and before we got Anachronia, they did rework the whole dig site area.
That was just speculation on my part.
Yeah, it's fine. And, you know, Mod Warden comes to the scene and uses language as he does very well. He says, "I don't want to overpromise and underdeliver." And he doesn't always want to spill the beans, but he likes to keep surprises. And he also likes talking about updates that are on the way.
I know I sound like a broken record at this point, but I'm so pleased with the way he has came in and the decisions he's making and the way he's handling the company. I thought going into this, I'm like, how is this going to turn out? Are we going to find out something? Is it going to continue to be dry? And what did we find out? Well, we found out that Mod Warden's the kind of guy, if he says it, he means it, and it's more than likely going to happen. And he doesn't say things that he doesn't think can happen. So
and that
that's
pivoted,
why we
right
have to wait, you know?
And that pivoted
but
into...
Look what we got. Look at what we got.
Yeah, let's not hear yet. Let's not count our chickens before they hatch. But he says the next thing he said was quality, quality, quality.
Yeah, this... You know how I know this stuff is coming?
How?
Because he told me interface scaling was coming. It's in beta. So I have every reason to believe this stuff is going to come. And here's the thing. When people are actually good at leadership, you never hear them going up there saying that. They never really, like the good ones, they never up there going, hey, I told you I was going to do this, and I did it. And no, they're up. No, it's only the failures that are usually up there saying, no, I'm awesome, man. So I feel like we got to like call it out when someone's doing the right thing, but they're being humble.
Yeah.
You know, like.
Yeah. He also said that we need to build our teams more smartly than we have before. And he's been focused on defining new roles and responsibilities that weren't there before. He's hired new content devs, programmers, a lead producer for RuneScape, so someone who will report to him, and an art director that will be actually starting on Monday. So
that one, I was like, man, I have a lot of thoughts about that one. I think it's a great addition. I was almost surprised that there wasn't one already, because I don't know. I always felt like RuneScape kind of has a RuneScape feel to it, like a very specific kind of.
Yeah. And he said this art director will be about taking the game forward, looking at these past 20 years, finding out the RuneScape DNA, and then figuring out where it goes for the next 20 years on the art front with that. And, you know, I think we need to also just highlight that, you know, he talks about building the teams more smartly than he has before. And, you know, we haven't seen it in the past, but we really haven't really been privy to the way that the structure inside Jagex works, because most of the time we would see just JMods and them talking about the content that they put out. We didn't know how the teams were structured. We didn't know how the management side worked.
We knew scrums, right? Like, we might have known who was on. Well, sometimes we knew who was on what, but we never knew they'd switch around.
Right. But now we know we have Mod Warden who is involved as the executive producer, who's going to have a producer that reports to him. We know Maude Osborne is in charge of the narrative side of things. We know that there's various aspects of the way that the game is structured into the team set, building, you know, specific updates and the like. But then we also have different teams like Core Experience and Live Ops with Maude Mike and so on and so forth. And I think this new team structure is what they needed to effectively reorient the development studio and, you know, just kind of tweak that fire that's been there and it's struck occasionally in the past, but have it strike with each update that has come out because that's how it's been this year. And I think this is something that is often overlooked by the player base out there because they're concerned about the outrage of the week, in this case, of course, being the bug with the promo event, or maybe it being taking so long to complete the event. But just below the surface, you have things like this happening, and that's something we really haven't seen before, and that's something to write home about.
Yeah, it's something we don't hear much about. I think we started to see, you know, the teams had kind of taken shape, you know, in the early year, prior to Archaeology. And then everyone was home. So they're like,
yeah.
I think they're just now probably gelling kind of and starting to, and maybe, I don't even know if they're back in the office. So maybe they're not back yet.
No.
So then I think that's even better that of the job they're doing. I do want to, not like overlook the fact though that Maude Warden also he said that like exactly what we predicted of like a medium to large scale update might happen, you know, it's looking like monthly with what was said, but he's also saying, look, the patch weeks are important weeks, those are updates. And I know people don't see those as updates, like I do. Like Tannis knows people are not, they don't look at that as updates. But I told you they did. I told you they did. And they do. And so, like, when you think there's a drought, there might be, but that's more of a matter of, like, timing.
Because yeah, it's not nearly as bad as it was last year.
Right. And I don't think people, and since people didn't know any of this stuff coming, you know, and like I said, that's good and bad. Maude Warden's not going to tell us if he's not confident. And it's 2020, so how can he really be confident about anything? But, you know, so could he have told us a little bit earlier? Was this the right time? Yeah, you be the judge, I guess. But I'm pretty happy with the way things went.
Indeed. All right. Then we got on to talking about the actual content that was on the way. Halloween will be a mini quest, as well as skill training style piece of content. They want to do events that can be layered upon year over year, as in something they bring back and add to it. And, you know, we say, where have we heard that before? Overwatch, Star Trek Online, and so on and so forth. And they're going back to a character that they've loved in previous Halloween events. I hope it's Death.
So, and I, oh man, I hope, I want.
At his house.
Ah, yes, yes. You probably were not a South Park fan, were you?
No,
Canadian. So I could see why you weren't a South Park fan. But there was like a double episode where there was this like imagination land. It was like another dimension and with all the characters from your imagination. Wouldn't that be so cool if RuneScape had like a holiday land that we, you know, like a,
where
all the events took place.
Right. And it would change based on the holiday or something.
Yes. Wouldn't that be, that'd be cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it would.
And you could just add to it each year and it would have a presence. Like you don't have to come up with a story now because you already came up with a story. This is holiday world or I don't know, whatever you want to call it. But yeah,
and this is the way events need to be. This is the way events need to be, honestly.
Yeah, I like the mini quest and skilling part of it. I don't I think the mixture is good. Like, I don't necessarily love it when it's just a quest. So I'm always glad when there's a little more to it than that.
Why were portable workbenches not included within portable crates? They wanted it to be a meaningful drop.
It's the money, Lebowski.
It was about making the release meaningful, as in meaningful about getting the money. But they will be added to portable crates in the future.
I heard him say they wanted to make it meaningful. I'm like, oh my god, that's the most Orwellian shit. I'm like, are you okay? Yeah, meaningful. Okay.
There will also be new Abyssal Demon Slayer creatures that Mod Shogun is designing, coming at levels 95, 105, and 115 Slayer, and they showcased some of these out in the stream this week.
I'd be excited for those, but I'm 120 Slayer. The only reason I'm hanging...
95, 105, 115, not 120.
No, that's what I'm saying. I'm already 120. I wanted to be excited for these, but the only thing I'm holding on to now is I've liked everything Mod Shogun's done before. Like, I like Safecracking. And, like, so I'm hoping. I'm hoping that this will be good, too.
Yeah. I don't know. I'd like to see some meaningful form of the Abyssal Whip at, you know, tier 90 or high 80s or something to that effect. And I mean, at that point, you know, hey,
that's true.
Yeah, we got one at 85, so on and so forth, right? So,
and they could do that because, I mean, look, when the Abyssal 1 and Orb came out, that was cool for a minute.
Yeah.
I guess we were all a lot weaker then, but it was cool for a minute.
Yeah, Lava Whip, 85. I don't know. Anywho, continuing on in the live stream, are there any talks to rework skills like the mining and smithing rework? That's an option for them in the future, and they could look at doing something like that. But things like the new construction skill training method being put out can address some of the issues with the skill and aim to alleviate it in the short term. So they're kind of taking the short form of the mining and smithing rework that was pulled and didn't win back in the day. And they say to use Safecracking as a reference point to what this construction content would look like. And they compared notes, and they actually worked with the old school team on this update to determine what they could do and what they shouldn't do and how it could become beneficial with their recent Mahogany Homes update. And I think that's something we talked about in our monthly bit, didn't we?
I believe it is.
That, hey, let's...
Like I say, we're almost like prophets.
Let's, you know, put this out there and see. Do these guys work together? And, oh, wait, they do. Continuing on...
Did that sadden you, though, Shane? Like, I definitely got the feel that they are excited about doing that again, and I still stand by that was one of the best that's one of the best, most standout pieces of content since I've been playing.
Which?
The mining and smithing.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
You know, and I just
I think it'd be a
hard decision.
I don't
know, why don't they love it like we do?
Because it took 18 months to do and it didn't add new skills to the game. That's why. And that's very expensive when you look at it.
But it really did.
I know. We liked it, but it didn't, you know, provide enough oomph for them. So.
Agility. Bye-bye.
Well, just wait. We have something on that later. Will the rate at which quests are released see an increase? And they say questing is important for lore and world building, of course. Mod Warden says that he's going to be looking at other releases that haven't been delivered from RuneFest. Wants to do more with questing, and as for the word cadence or the rate, that has not been worked out yet about what quests will do. And piggybacking off of this, Mod Osborne said he's interested in having a solid story told through quests, but also other content. And three of the four pieces of content already talked about on the live stream this week would focus on story, bring the story forward. And the story quality, bar set, and desperate measures will be continued throughout all content. So, nothing yet on quests, but it's there. It's there.
But we're getting, we are getting story.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
We're getting story.
Absolutely.
That, you know. So I mean, that's like a double win for me. You mean I don't have to do puzzles and I get to explore and learn about the world? Cool. Double win.
Let's see. Next up, no update on activity pets about when they will be arriving, but they got some of the models that they were able to show off of what they'll look like when they arrive in-game. And this was the area pet. They also showed off the magpie money-making pet as well, and Zez, the RuneScore pet. That will change its color to the different armor types as your RuneScore levels up. So they had some in-game model previews on these.
Yeah, that one's... I think that one's...
Yeah, no ETA. I think they just want to keep this away, stashed in there as something that, hey, we're working on and on the back end, and, you know, if there's a gap or a shortage, we can just kind of put it in, right? So. And then, the question about art and the artistic direction was brought up because, you know, some players feel that, you know, content like Anachronia or maybe some of the archaeology stuff was seen it seen as cartoony and possibly aimed at a mobile game, so to speak. So what are the thoughts on the art direction moving forward? And Mod Warden, this is where he said that he's working with the stylistic aspect of the content seen in Anachronia and archaeology, and he realizes that the game isn't consistent in all areas, but they want to look forward to the 20th anniversary of the game. And the current area and the way they do the art is focused on research and player testing that has been done. And when it comes to art direction, one thing he wants to look at is the player avatar. And he knows it would be a big job to update the player avatar. And, you know, I feel like when he arrived, we heard the same kind of thing about interface scaling. It's something he wants to look at. And less than a year later, we got a beta for it.
And here's the thing. Like, I can't say that I really understand that much of that perspective. Like, RuneScape's always been a little cartoony, right? Like, that's
yeah.
What... Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's... I can see maybe it's more noticeable with Anachronia, but really, this is a 20-year game. It's gonna, like, its art is gonna reflect that. And I know for a fact, because I know people that have been invited to this, but I know they've done the market research. Like, I know a friend that went and did that. Like, they can't talk about it, but I know they went and did it. So, like, in... So, like, that's what we're getting is what it, like, it has been tested and stuff. Like,
yeah, so they're not lying on that.
Because I know people. No, I know people have done it.
And on that note, what you see in archaeology and Anachronia has actually been a result of that research.
There you go.
And, you know, they can't say what the vision of RuneScape looks like in the future because they're bringing that art director on. And some of the Dwarven Mine issues that have arose with that will be fixed soon. Ah, then came the question about augmentable skilling offhands. And, you know, said that, yeah, this is definitely possible in the future, and it will likely happen with upcoming content releases. And they know that the design that Mod Shawnee and Timbo talked about, or if you listen to this podcast, Mod Sirion, as we called it back then, was about 5 different designs across all skills that would be able to be used, but it was very tough to balance. So they're going to be taking a different approach with that, focusing on each skill in its own way, and they plan to do them this year as reward content.
Reward content?
Yeah. Ooh. There was a question about invention. About if there's going to be any new tech trees or something to that effect. And they said Invention will be getting an update, something that leans into it this year, later this year.
I mean, it would
So what if the skilling offhands are rewards from, or a reward from Orthon?
Oh. Oh. Could be. Could they balance it that well? No, they've had this for a long time. Hey,
I see that as one possibility. Another possibility I see being the items you get from Orthon is ancient herb lore, because that was what was initially talked about.
well, in Anachronia, Kaizen, but how come? You know what we've gotten with every dig site? We get the mysteries, and we're gonna. Oh, and this is gonna be the Dragonkin. I'm
Yeah,
hyped.
me too.
I'm
Me
hyped
too.
for Orton.
And you know, same thing with skilling offense. One thing the ninja team will be doing in the future is lunar spellbook improvements. You don't say, hey? I mean, yeah.
The
I mean, I use it for the teleports.
Yeah, it used to be
And the
useful,
fact
but
that everybody always goes to the traveling merchant to get their livid plants speaks volumes about Livid Farm, and they had to effectively have the amount of produce points you needed.
still
So,
not well enough. I
well,
still have to. I'm still going to the merchant.
yeah. They may reopen the dojo in a matter of weeks, and the ninja team appreciated the messages of love that were dropped into the dojo. It's also been known that PVMers want the Hazelmere Signet Ring to work on loot chests to double loot. I mean, okay. I mean, are we really being that
Or like,
picky?
well, damn it! If I do Rise of the Six, I should have the same chance. I mean, come on, come on.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't like that.
What? Because you can't go kick, so or Talos and have it drop 60 mil out in an hour. Okay.
Yeah. Will Invention get any more tech trees added? They said there's many tech trees that they could add in, but the Skilling Council feels that Invention isn't the skill that needs work right now. They're specifically looking at construction and agility. But Invention will be
Yeah.
getting some love in the next few months, but nothing in the tech tree way.
Well, they just didn't pursue that. And, can they even really go back to it now? Like, does it?
No.
I never thought it was really.
And you know, honestly, it's not a real tech tree because
It doesn't
you can
matter,
unlock all of them.
right? Yeah,
Yeah.
you do both, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Early tech tree, right?
Yeah,
It's like a
and you know, the reason they put that in is
Polish.
because when that was announced, the whole idea behind that was that they needed gnome and dwarven tech, because that was something that was talked about when Invention was first teased. So moving on. Could the dwarven tools be added to the dwarf tech tree? They said theoretically yes, but no plans. And I mean, do you really need that given the fact that we got them out from the currency event now, I wonder? I don't know.
I mean, I'm a firm believer that it should you should be able to make all of those things through
Yeah.
invention.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
I mean, they might be expensive, it might cost, you know what I mean? But I think you should be able to.
What about the rest of the Eastern lands? The Ark was well received, they say, but
What?
Arpasandra
What are
has
they
the.
talking about? What?
But Arpasandra, otherwise known as the Gnome homeland, has the most momentum if they were to add a new landmass. The reaction to Anachronia, though, points towards skilling and reinvigorating the core of the game rather than just adding new land masses to it.
I mean, that's good, but definitely, I think definitely no. What are they talking about the Arkless? Nobody liked the art. It wasn't. We had to do it. Nobody liked it.
There will be a data stream probably for the 20th anniversary. Oh, and here's another one. People wanting the essence of finality cost to be cheaper. What was the rationale behind making the essence of finality use alchemical hydrix instead of regular hydrix to recharge it? There needed to be a
They
bigger
want it
sink for
cheaper.
Yeah, people want it cheaper.
For what it does.
For what it does.
For what it does.
Like this, when, it's
you
absolutely
heard what David said about it. Like, it's the cheapest, most impactful thing that you can, single item you can use. He said it's he would rather have that than, what do you say, the 92?
Yeah.
He'd rather go with 90 and that than have a 90. Ridiculous. I'm sorry. That's ridiculous.
Yeah. But they want there to be a bigger fortunate cost or fortunate component sink, and being such a powerful item, it needs to have a high repair cost. They also said there isn't much room for PVM equipment in the necklace slot, if any, after this release, so they need something that warrants upkeep. Mod Warden, are the updates detailed in this live stream the right theme of what should be coming out? And that's a question he asked Twitch chat, so we'll answer that right here. I would say largely yes, you know, bulk majority on skilling. You know, throw a bone to the PVMers out there. It'd just be nice if we had more quests, I think, you know?
And for me, that depends on how much story we get and how it's going to be. Like, I really like how the story was handled through archaeology. You know, if we can do that, more of that, then I'm okay waiting on the Desperate Measures kind of quality quest.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, so.
Yeah. Let's see. The upcoming boss will be solo duo. Give players a target for their powerful weapons that they have. They want it to be a new challenge along the line of Araxor, so, you know, not Solak, knock your teeth out kind of thing. So we'll have to watch that, and maybe one of us will go fight that. Mobile-wise, crash rates are lower than they've been. iOS capacity is, of course, full. They're looking at the first-time user experience and high-priority UIs that need to be addressed. And realistically, they're looking for a launch in the new year.
I've experienced very few crashes. And is it just me, or has the X thing been improved? Because
I don't think it has. I think it's just you.
See, I've been able to. Okay. Well, then I've dialed in on that treasure hunter box a lot better then, because I used to, every time I tapped it, it would open the damn thing, and now I'm actually able to close it, you know, without opening it. So that's why I wondered.
All right. And I'm so glad they're doing this, because I know they were talking about Q4 for release, but there's just so many still things out there that would, you know, hammer the score of the app in the App Store that, you know, given the state RuneScape is at, they really wouldn't deserve that. So I think the longer they can wait to, you know, get something out there that's proper, the better. I think that's what it comes down to.
Waited this long.
What was that?
Most people have waited this long.
Yeah. And, I mean, anybody on Android can pick it up now. So that's half the population right there. The spirit of remastering will live on through the teams as they are now. They don't have a specific remastering team as they talked about last year because all the teams have been reshuffled. In regards to minigames, they'd like to make more minigame content relevant, but that would probably come in the form of a minigame hub, Thaler improvements, and nothing in particular is being worked on with minigames at this point. They doubled down that there will be 4 Yak Tracks a year and 4 double XP live events a year, as well as regular seasonal time-limited events, and this is all fairly predictable and will be maintained into the next year. Then they closed off the stream talking about discontinued rare items and price manipulation for items that are higher than max cash, because, you know, they're not trackable except by way of the people that keep a tally on the forums. They said the solutions for increasing these is either a currency increase cap or a secondary currency, but this is a very niche issue because it would affect such a small amount of people, and it's very large for the amount of bang for the buck that it would bring, but they're always keeping an eye on price manipulation. And
it's only going to affect the people hanging out down there at the Duel Arena.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, the money goes through there, dude. They need to put a tax on that right there. I'm telling you, put a tax on the Duel Arena.
That'd be a fun way to take money out of the game.
It would do it. Well, it's ruining your hate mail now.
Oh, I bet we will. I bet we will. And that's it for the live stream. Overall, I was very pleased with that.
Yeah, I was pleased, and I wasn't expecting it. Like, I had kind of settled in, like, okay, it'll probably be another couple more weeks before, you know, we get something real substantial or anything. And even though, yes, it was we got the currency event, I feel like this live stream was almost like an update in of itself. Like, it gave me that kind of a optimism for what we got coming.
Yeah, and we kind of get to see exactly where things are, which is always good. So, all right, we're going to move on to tech news in just a moment. But before we do that, I do want to thank our Patreon supporters. Oh, wait, there's one more thing. Before I get too far into that, I'll just remind everybody about the Golden Gnome nominations and, in particular, the art showcase that we did last week, where we showcased Zach Spieler's art, Gawky's music, and the novel from Chaos Elemental, or otherwise known as Probably Writing. So if you want to get a quick preview of that, I've linked our discussion and showcase of those in the show notes, which you can find at update.rsbnb.com, because, you know, you definitely give these a look. And, you know, if you feel kind of ambivalent about the whole video side, just go check out the art side and whatnot. That was fun to do last week. And I've actually been in contact with all those artists that we showcased. And
oh, cool.
They've been very grateful for that. So they've since been nominated by me. So I would encourage everybody else to also go out there and nominate these fine people.
Absolutely.
All right. Patreon. Okie dokie. Well, you know, it's that time of the month. Patreon members can go vote on the monthly bit. We just did another movie night. Earth chose the movie White Chicks. So that's going to be available very soon for Patreon members to download if you haven't already. But in particular this week, we need to give a big thank you to our Patreon supporters for this episode. I'd like to thank Brock H., Cameron, Cass, CGB900, Christian S., Diana, Duramax, Jade Gizmo, JW, James W., Jason S., Joe M., John P., Kyle, Mr. Ling, Nora, Rastafa, Samantha R., Stubby, The Naked Captain, The Lion, Tom V., and Zant. Thank you all of you for your support. It truly means the world to us. And in case you're wondering what all this is about, just head on over to patreon.com/RSBNB, and there you can learn about becoming a Patreon member. For as little as $1 a month, you can support the podcast. You'll get early access to the show notes and a mention in the show notes. Also, of course, you get to come to the round table, vote on the monthly bid, 10 movie night, and so on and so forth. That's all for $1 a month. We also have a VIP tier for $3 a month, where you'll get a special mention on the podcast at the start of the month and access to high-quality stereo AAC versions of the show. And for $5 a month, you can get a shout-out each and every week, and you also get exclusive access to the outtakes that we use to form the clip show at the end of the year. And as we've been talking about, we, of course, have the monthly bit, which you can go there and vote for now. We have Inside Update, which is a little bit of a look at Inside RSBNB Update, figuring out how things work and so on and so forth. We have the Roundtable, which we did this month on Double XP Live, and, of course, Movie Night. And I, of course, will just tease this out, that in the coming weeks, next week or so, maybe 2 weeks, we do have some expansions to the Patreon tiers on the way, so keep your eyes out for those. So you can learn more about this at patreon.com/RSBNB, and thanks so much, everyone, for supporting us. It means the world to us.
Thanks, everyone. It's awesome.
All right, tech news. So I have a question for you.
Do I like Walmart?
Yeah, do you like Walmart? And what do they have to do with Alphabet and SoftBank?
They're secretly ran by the Chinese?
Not quite, but Walmart wants to be the majority owner of TikTok. They were going to team up with Alphabet and SoftBank before Microsoft got in on this.
You know, I didn't like TikTok when it was a Chinese company. I don't think I'm going to like it much more when it's Walmart.
They wanted to be
the
lead investors in concert with Alphabet. And TikTok is set to choose in between the Microsoft Walmart offer and a bid from Oracle within the next 48 hours. And, you know, this is a bit of a odd combination of Microsoft and Walmart, but, you know.
Jay.
Yeah.
How many TikToks you think are out there of people that might be on, like, I don't know, carts? you know, the Walmart. Yeah, you know. You think they were like, we're going to buy this, and we're taking down every one of these TikTok.
SoftBank was the lead behind this, and they felt that Walmart's all-American image combined with Google's cloud infrastructure would be a way for the Japanese company SoftBank to get into TikTok and bring it to the U.S., which they say is specialized in buying young, high-flying technology companies, including both Uber and WeWork in the past years. And they wanted to be – Walmart wanted to be the exclusive e-commerce and payments provider for TikTok and have user access to the – or have data – access to the user data to enhance those capabilities.
Who said Walmart was all-American? What? If Walmart is all-American, we're done. We're done here.
But reportedly –
wrap it up.
The U.S. government wanted the lead buyer of TikTok to be a tech company because that would better fit with its national security rationale for forcing the Chinese company ByteDance to sell TikTok. And it has actually been confirmed that Walmart is partnering with Microsoft on this TikTok deal. So it's either going to be Walmart, Microsoft, or Oracle to buy it.
Is that what people think, Shane?
I don't know.
Do they think Walmart is a representation of us?
No.
That's bad.
And, you know, I think there's many aspects here that Walmart would be interested in when it comes to just the user data it would provide. Because, you know, that's what Amazon's whole game is with that. And Walmart effectively will want to find a way to become the next Amazon. And with user data
they
from TikTok,
they don't need that. Have you ever been inside a Walmart, Shane?
I know, but they want to do that online.
But people will tell you their life story standing in line. You don't need to track data. They'll tell you.
Really?
My sister's got a goiter on her neck. Oh, God.
Yikes.
Ooh. Oh, well, I don't shop there, nor do I TikTok. But
it's interesting, nonetheless, that Walmart is partnering with Microsoft.
I just want to know who said that's an all-American company, because someone has lied to them.
I don't know.
Badly.
I don't know. Next piece of tech news. Amazon announced something called a Halo bracelet. And this is their fitness band that pairs with an app. And it's not actually something like a smartwatch or a Fitbit. It just provides the most basic of health monitoring. And what they want to do is they want to use your camera to create 3D scans of for body fat and listening to the emotion in your voice, in addition to being a fitness tracker.
The Halo band. That's what we need.
The Halo band will cost $100 and will have a service fee of $3.99 a month for its advanced services that they're offering. And what they're trying to do with this is they say focus less on sports and exercise and more on lifestyle changes. Alongside cardio, sleep, body fat, and voice tone tracking, a Halo subscription will offer a suite of labs developed by its partners that are short challenges designed to improve your health habits like meditation, sleeping, or basic exercise routines. And they say it's not a medical device, so it doesn't have to be FDA approved. And
now what the,
it's
you
really
know what
just
this
a little
year
bracelet. What's that?
I'm really glad the people over at Amazon worked so hard and diligent to give us a bracelet that could fat shame us. That is exactly what we needed this year. We have not been depressed and anxious enough. I want the fat shaming bracelet. Can it take my picture?
Woo! No, it can't take your picture.
Well, he said it scans.
Well,
for body fat.
It relies on your phone to do that with pictures. You have to take the picture yourself.
Oh, well, still. This has bad idea for young teenagers written all over it. Body image issues. This is probably not good.
The person it shows in the demo has a body fat percentage of 28%, weighs 140 pounds.
I don't even know if that's good or bad.
I don't know. And the way it works, here's where it gets interesting. The app instructs you to wear tight-fitting clothing, ideally just your underwear, and then stand back 6 feet or so from your camera. It will then take 4 photos of the front, back, and sides, and then uploads them to the Amazon servers where they're combined into a 3D scan of your body.
Yeah. What's up, boys? I'll pass. Ah, shit. Seriously? They could already hear you doing it. Now they want a good picture of you.
They say the data will then be deleted from Amazon servers.
Well, no one ever lies about that, right?
Amazon then will use machine learning to analyze the scan and calculate your body fat percentage. And they say Amazon says that body fat is a more reliable indicator of health either than body weight, mass index, or just body weight.
How long until we get Alexa capability to where it can just like, I don't know. I guess you'd be, I don't know, can you order something? Do they have stuff from Whole Foods?
Oh, and then it gets even better. You ready for this?
Uh-huh.
Once you have your scan, the app will give you a slider that you can drag your finger on. It will show you what you would look like with more or less body fat.
No, 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 no. No, this is going to kill some kid, dude. No.
The feature is meant to be educational and motivational.
Mm-mm.
But they say it could also be dangerous for other people with body dysmorphic disorder, anorexia, or other self-image issues.
You think? Well, I'm glad they said it.
It won't allow the slider to show dangerous levels of body fat, and there's information about how body fat can lead to health problems. And the body scan feature, they say, will only be available to people 18 and up. Unless you lie about your age. It also will track the tone of your voice and allow you to gauge whether you're, you know, I guess, happy or not based on that.
Tell you, like, what your blood pressure is?
No, it doesn't.
Something?
No, it doesn't.
Well, I mean, if you're screaming or something, you just...
Yeah, it'll tell you if you're screaming. Yeah.
Oh, great. So, you know... Just in case.
The speech will be analyzed on your device, then deleted. It also provides sleep tracking.
How long till we hear a story come out about this, Shane? About some security kerfuffle?
Like the time in Alexa listened to someone committing a murder or something?
Well, this happened. Well, remember when Alexa, when she just started sending out emails?
It wasn't that. It's when the Alexa started talking about and giving directions to the nearest funeral parlor.
Oh, yes, that too. Like, yeah, now we're going to do it with our body image. Okay.
And you know what the disconcerting part about this is? There was a sci-fi show in the early 2010s called Continuum. And they had a Halo band that did exactly the same thing. That wasn't a smartwatch. It was an all-in-one health device called Halo. I wonder if that's where Amazon got the name from.
leave it to a dystopian.
That's exactly what it was.
Come up with a dystopian future.
And that's what the TV show was, dystopian.
Woo! Yeah, I mean, but at this point, really, you just have to laugh, right? Grab a beer and enjoy the ride, because ain't nobody getting off this train.
Are you going to buy one of these?
No. No. And I'm going to do my damnedest to make sure my daughter never learns of its existence. Because she doesn't need to have problems like that.
Ay, ay, ay. All right. Well, in more lighthearted news, it was 25 years ago this week that Windows 95 came out.
Really crazy. That's awesome, though. I mean, when you think about it, like 25 years is such a little time in the span of human history and innovation. I mean, think about it. Like, it's insane.
And you know what the funny part about this is? Is that the start menu in Windows today got its start in Windows 95, and it really hasn't changed much since then. It changed a bit in 7 and Vista and more in 10. But until Vista in 2006, it was practically the same. And it still serves the same purpose today.
And 95 was like the first one I felt like you could use. Like it was.
Yeah, because before really that in 3.1, you had the program manager, and there was no start menu then.
Yeah. It's so crazy to think of like how we began learning on the computers that we began learning on. And
yeah, first was 95.
Wow. I was in a buddy program that predated it. We were still on a DOS system, I think. Yeah. So it was a few years before.
And you know what the interesting part is? It wasn't until this past year that those original Windows 95 16-bit apps would stop working on Windows 10. It was last fall's Windows 10 update that actually deprecated 16-bit code.
Crazy. I didn't know that.
So you'd still be able to run, for the most part, if it was 16-bit until last year, a Windows 95 app. And, you know, most apps that are 32-bit that were Windows 95 would probably still run in some form on Windows 10.
There has to be, like, so I'm pretty sure some of the original PC Star Wars games that I got back in the 90s were around that same time. You have to have a compatibility patch, but you can still play them because I have them on my PC.
Yeah. And, you know, I think there's methods you could use for that, whether it be virtualization or, you know, maybe just finding a binary that's been ported to the NT base, which would be XP, and that would run easier on 10.
Yeah, I don't know how it did it. I had to go in and actually, like, allow the computer to make it compatible, but it looks and feels just like I remember.
So, yeah, and this article we have for this one really says that it was the start menu and taskbar that made Windows 95 and, you know, proliferated so deep into the future of Windows. Which I think is entirely true in that regard. Do you remember the partnership, I guess you could call it, between Microsoft and the Rolling Stones?
That's been around for so long, but I do remember, I think my mom saw.
They did a marketing campaign to bring forward the idea of the start menu, and they used the Rolling Stones Start Me Up song.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And, you know, so many things with that have precipitated since then. Windows 95 wasn't even internet capable at the time. It wasn't really until 98 that happened, Windows 98. And so many advancements came with Windows 95. Also, plug and play in terms of adding in additional hardware to the system as well, so you didn't need to do weird support. You would also get USB support at the later end in 1997 on Windows 95 through an update. that would become mainstream on Windows 98. And, you know, Windows 95 was kind of buggy. I remember there were two versions of it. There was the original version and a modified version. They called it Windows 95B, as it was, and that one made it better. But, you know, Windows 98 is really where it hit its stride. And I remember when we started our website back in 2004, people were still using Windows 98 to play RuneScape. That's how big 98 was, piggybacking off 95. So 25 years ago, Windows as we know it today effectively formed, I will say. And, you know, macOS has been through its own iterations since then, but I think the changes we've seen from Microsoft here were equally revolutionary in that time, though a bit slower and more concentrated on legacy.
Yeah. But it's also been the backbone of business since then, too.
Yeah, yeah, in many ways, more than one. All right, so interesting tech news as always, kind of creepy on the Amazon front. Oh, we're going to move on to some other things and wrap shortly. But before we do that, of course, we have some achievements this week. Not as many as last week, but still a good number. So get us started, speaking of the start menu.
All right. So starting off, we have Surge Aurora with 99 smithing on August 25th. We have Zilcam with 99 archaeology on August 25th. We have Bird is the Man with 99 Strength on August 24th. Bird is the Man with 99 Slayer on August 24th. We have Dom the Mexican with 99 Fishing on August 24th. And Dom the Mexican with 99 Slayer on August 24th.
Nicely done, everyone.
Yeah.
Nicely done. I'm going to pick up the list now. We got Rastafa with 200 million defense and 120 invention on August 24th. Or 120 divination, sorry. That's an Iron Man, isn't that?
That is an Iron Man. That is an Iron Man.
Congratulations there. That's amazing. Darkest Knight with 99 farming on the 23rd. Stinky Pete 22 with 99 agility on the 22nd. Then on the 20th, we have Doc Hawk with 99 fishing and Izzarap with 120 slayer. All right. Good picks of the week, everyone. We're going to move on. Or not picks of the week, achievements. That's where we're moving next. The pick of the week. The pick of the week. All right. Let's go, Tannis.
All right. So I got a really, 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 really cool pick of the week this week. So you know how I often tell you, like, I get a little unsure about buying games sometimes because I never know if I'm going to be able to play them or not.
Sure.
And it's not easy to find like accessibility reviews out there, right, in gaming. But it turns out actually you can get a lot of accessibility reviews on a lot of games out there. So not only are there a lot of like YouTubers that are blind and do reviews of games, there is a website called Can I Play That? And these guys are all disabled gamers. It's for and by, but it's professional writing. I mean, a very high caliber. And it's a great community that I have found. And the one thing I've been looking at, Microsoft Flight Simulator, because
I'm just reading that article right now here.
Oh, see, I really wanted to play that, and so I went there and I checked it out to see if it was going to be something that would work, and I think it will. So I'm pretty excited, but yeah. So the site's called Can I Play That? It's like I said, disabled gamers writing articles and gaming articles. They're in different categories, like, so they'll have commentary and analysis. They have a category of why I play, how I play, and then, you know, all the reviews and everything. And there is a set way that they do the reviews so that it's consistent all the way through.
Right.
I was really I thought it was awesome, just because there have been so many times I have bought games thinking that I was going to be able to play, and it didn't work out that way. So,
and it's so hard to get refunds on those too.
Yes.
From Steam.
Well, and it used to be like, man, it used to be impossible. Like, you just got burnt.
Yeah.
You know, like, that was just the way it was. I mean, now it's a little bit better. And I will give Steam credit. They have never given me crap when it has been an accessibility issue. Like, not once. So, you know, that's cool. But, yeah, hopefully that won't come up, because I will go to Can I Play That? And find out if I can play that now. So, yeah.
Fall Guys, Marvel's Avengers, Next Gen System Level Accessibility Reveals. That's interesting. Gaming with Chronic Illness. Oh, yeah. Yeah, Xbox Series 2 Elite Controller. We know that one was going to be good for that. Yeah, looks like a good website. And, you know,
many of the people have worked as consultants,
right?
So, I know the blind gamer, Steve. Another blind gamer. I'm the blind gamer. He is the blind gamer, Steve. Anyway, he worked with Naughty Dog for The Last of Us, and everyone says that, or The Last of Us 2, and everyone says that's the most accessible game that has ever been made, ever, of all time. You pick an accessibility template before the game starts.
Right.
You can play this game without any vision. And I had no interest in that game at all. And now I'm like, I'm going to have to try it. I'm going to have to buy it so that my money shows that I care about it, even though I had no interest in this game.
You know, another good thing that they do on their website is they have a very clear switch for light mode and dark mode based on your screen. But they also have a large text, easy to read text option as well that just blows the text up. I don't know if you noticed that. Focused on accessibility.
Like I said, this was founded by I think the woman is deaf, I think she passed actually, but everybody that works on this is disabled. And
they're also using they also use all the accessibility features of alt text on the images as well, in a very good way that I can see too. So
yeah, it's
so they practice
well
what they preach.
Yes.
Which is wonderful.
Like I said, when I found this, I was like, wow. And this all came because I'm looking into upgrading some of my assistive technology, and for the first time ever, the YouTube algorithm actually funneled me to a place that I wanted to be, and that was all of these other people with vision problems that I didn't know are out there that are making videos and doing stuff. And I watched a video, and that's how I learned about this website. And I found it. I'm like, Shane, this has to be pick of the week, man. This is awesome.
Like, wonderful. Wonderful.
Yeah.
All right.
So, yeah.
What have we been up to? I'll start this week. You know, I've been, I did a boatload of Tetra Compasses. I got me to level 106 on that. I'm going to do 107. I think what I'm going to do for 107 is start prepping a load of Tetra Compasses for Red Rum Relics 2 for when I get to 110 Archaeology. So I'm just at those various spots along the way, stocking up on the first three artifacts in Red Rum Relics 2. I also did a whole bunch of housekeeping as well, housekeeping that I've been meaning to do since the last Yak Track ended. What that means is that I was really short on Divine Charges, so I couldn't run the machines in the Invention Guild to disassemble everything from that Yak Track or Alk, the things that needed to be Alk. So I spent some time gathering Divine Charges. I also spent time just gathering divine energy as well, because for those who don't know out there, when it comes to archaeology and porters, I have no problem using porters. I make my own porters, though. Everything from making my own diamond necklaces to gathering my divine energy, I make all that stuff myself. I even mine the ore myself if I need gold ore. So it was a weekend of housekeeping in terms of stocking up on the divine products, making sure that I had all the gold and whatnot, and just stocking up on porters too. And after that, got 106 archaeology, and right now I've been focusing on the new traveling artisan event. I've been doing the mystery boxes until I level up according to the path that I laid out in my sheet. And when I need just general patches, I'm doing archaeology to get them. So that's what I've been up to this week. And you?
I have been pretty much doing archaeology, but I'm kind of in a weird spot in this 91 level, and I don't know what to do or where to go at this point, so I just went back to where I was, and until I figure it out, I guess I'm still doing Warforged. I got to figure out where to go, but I think it isn't really clear until I hit like 90. What is it, 3 or? I'm not sure.
So you're level 91 right now?
Yeah.
And you've completed all the collections and whatnot at the Armadale place? For that
I haven't
one?
Done anything in Armadale, pretty much.
Yeah, what you want to do then is go back to Stormguard and do the collections for the Graviton research at level 91.
I need to do collections too, because I could have Professor if I just...
Yeah, I would say use this time to catch up on the collections that you're missing, honestly.
Okay. Like to the collectors or like the
to the collectors
ones?
To the collectors.
Oh, I haven't given
so that's Volusia, Art Critic Jacques, and Isora for this one.
Okay.
At 91, 89 to 91. So that's a pretty big section. We also, I'm trying to remember when Red Rum 1 starts. When does Red Rum 1 start? So I've moved beyond that. Let me just have a quick gander at that, because it's important. You need 94 to complete that one. Another thing you could do after you get those collections done is you could start gathering the artifacts. The first half of the artifacts you need for Red Rum 1. Those are level 81.
Okay,
and, gather like a dozen of those, and that would be, three or four tetracompasses.
Awesome.
So,
definitely.
That's what I'd say.
Red Rum 1, a 94.
Yeah. And the first half of Red Rum 1 is at 81. So, I would first complete the collections for the 91 spot and any other ones that you're missing up to 91. Then I would go back to this Warforged spot at 81, the 81 ancient casket crucible stands debris.
Okay.
And that's the first half of Red Rum 1. And I know from experience that I did have a shortage of these two artifacts at 81. So I would recommend stocking up on those when you have downtime. But yeah, a little bit of an archaeology tip with that there.
All right.
So that's good. I don't think I have anything else this week. You good to go?
I'm good to go.
Alrighty then. Thank you for joining us, everybody. We'll be back next week with another update episode, and it's going to be a fun one. It's going to be our Everlight lore special with Sirion and Diana. So we're going to talk about the Ceridoman dig site and go back all into the lore history of the Everlight, the Icene, and whatnot, and figure out what exactly was happening with that. So if you're interested in lore, you like archaeology, next week's one that you're not going to want to miss. And to help with that, I recommend that you subscribe to the podcast. Just check us out. We're on all the podcast listeners out there: Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, Pocket Cast, YouTube, Stitcher, practically anything. Just visit update.rsbnb.com/subscribe. So with that being said, we'll see you guys all next week for another episode of RSBNB Update. Take care, everyone.
See ya.